Carol Bennett group put on our breakfast this morning, so we'll talk about that in a second. So you have no small group, and also the War Boys Moody group is not meeting today. So if you are part of either of those small groups, just enjoy the evening with your family, and we will see you back at their next small group next week. Okay, let's talk about the breakfast. Matt already talked about it a little bit, but some of you were still eating it when Matt was talking about it. So let me join with Matt thanking the Boro Bennett small group for the great breakfast. So let's give him a hand, especially that lady. And my mouth is watering because I have blueberries stuck in a filling. So if you see me take a break, you will know why. What we did this morning was we celebrated our kids. And if you're new to this church, I hope you will see how much your children matter to us. And if you have been here a long time, I hope you see consistently how much your children matter to us. In fact, everything we do right now, we are trying to do through the lens of how we can grow our children to be servants of the Lord. How we can keep them, how we can have them grow in their faith and their knowledge, and then go out and change a world that needs to be changed. And this breakfast is just one of the ways we can pray over their families and their parents and their teachers and everything else that is going on. And so if you participated in that in any way, thank you for blessing them and for blessing all of us in the room next door. I went back and forth about if I should change the sermon and talk about kids in a different way, but I kept thinking of the beatitude that we are to. Blessed are those who are pure in heart. And I can't help but think of our kids most of the time. Now, I say that most of the time because all of your kids, as Beverly Blackwell would say in the old days of VBS, have their halos on just a little bit crooked. Did I get it right, Beverly? Okay. So some of your kids, every now and then, they can be little turkeys. But for the most part, we look at our kids and we see purity in heart. I don't make it a habit to keep voicemails. Someone comes and leaves a voicemail. I try to do whatever that voicemail calls for, and then I delete it. But there is one voicemail that I have left on for a couple of years now, and only some of the kids call me this, so let's not make it popular. But we've got a couple of kids that call me Hugless Douglas, and their mother brought a book that said Hugless Douglas on it. And I have this voicemail, and in those days when I'd rather do anything than my job, I hit that little message, and I hear this, "Good morning, Hugless," and I think of that little boy who I held when he was just born. And it just reminds me of the importance of our children, because our children matter. And purity in heart matters. There's a couple of verses I want us to look at before we even start talking about the heart, because it's so critical. When God is talking to Samuel, there is this conversation about the next king. So the first king was Saul, and Saul was head and shoulders taller than everybody else, the Bible says. And he was bigger, and he was stronger, and he was a better warrior, and things went south. And then God is going to say this. He's going to say in 1 Samuel 16, "The Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance, or height, or his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart.'" Okay, so that's going to lead to the anointing of David. And the anointing to David is going to be this line where we often hear and say that David is a man after God's own heart. And that comes directly from this conversation between Samuel and God saying, "Here's what matters the most to me." Okay, I think it is impossible to read the Bible without this emphasis of what God sees. That over and over, God is going to say, "Your sacrifices, they're great, but the inside isn't right." And over and over through the prophets and through various other people that will speak, and the psalmist, he will constantly be reminding them, saying, "Here's what matters the most, and it's what is inside." And so Jesus writes this line in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." Blessed are the pure in heart. See, there's a couple of things that I think we need to get out in the front about the heart before we try to do anything practical. And the first thing is the heart is so critical because it is where the throne room is. Now, let me explain that a little bit. when you get the Hebrew concept of heart, you get this idea that it governs the will, but not only does it govern the will, but it governs the emotions, and it's the totality of the human being. So we think of heart maybe as just the ticker that's inside us. When the Hebrew word is used, it's all of you. And so whether it's the psalmist or whether it's a prophet or whether it's somebody else speaking, they're going to say, here is the heart, and it governs everything. Okay, I love this line from Solomon in Proverbs chapter 4. He writes these words, keep your heart with all diligence, for from it flows the spring of life. So Solomon is saying, okay, here is the totality of who we are, and you guard it as well as you can guard it, because coming forth out of it is what matters the most. Now Jesus would say throughout the Sermon on the Mount, and he might not use these exact words, but his whole point is going to be all the way through the rest of chapter 5, is I'm looking for heart righteousness. It's not just righteousness in law keeping, because they're pretty good at checking boxes. What Jesus is trying to say is, I want you to go beyond that, and I want the law keeping to penetrate your heart and your heart to look like God. But let's be honest. There are times what you see and what God sees are two totally different things. I think we've all met people who we looked at and maybe we thought they were great Christians and they were strong in their faith, and yet inside they didn't look anything like God. And maybe we've been that at times, because many people want to enjoy Jesus, but they don't want to enthrone him. And the idea of being pure in heart is not just saying Jesus is a good guy and Jesus is a great teacher and Jesus is one. Being pure in heart is enthroning him. Not just enjoying him. Because the second thing about the heart is the heart can be a pretty hypocritical thing. The heart is given to deception sometimes. Jeremiah would write this. He would say in Jeremiah 17, verse 9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? Okay, let's put Jeremiah chapter 17 into context. Jeremiah is written to Israel, who is in serious jeopardy because they have totally gone against God. It's not that they've stopped worshiping. They're still going to the temple, but they're doing all kinds of other stuff with it. And so it almost looks like from the outside, when you show up at the temple, you must love God. But inside, their heart is a mess. And Jeremiah is saying, here is at least one of the natural states of the human heart. And when it's allowed to go the wrong direction, it has devastating consequences. And so we come up with a word called hypocrite. You know how hypocrite works, right? You look one way, but inside you are totally different. And it's pretty easy to avoid purity in heart. And I'm not talking purity in heart just in what our eyes see and what our ears listen to. I'm talking purity in heart as this whole totality of who we are enthroning God, that it's pretty easy to play the hypocrite when it comes to that. We are too often a society of mask wearers. Okay, one writer wrote this. He said, religion has proven to be a wonderful mask for an impure heart. Okay, just think, it's a wonderful mask for an I can put my church face on, can't you? I mean, I can put my church face on and walk through those doors Sunday morning at 9 o'clock and tell everybody about how good Jesus is and teach a Bible class and tell everybody how wonderful it is that we're saved. And then I can sit here and I can sing songs and I can drop money in a plate and I can listen to the sermon sort of a little bit. And then I can say an amen at the closing prayer and I can walk out and I can turn into a total jerk. Okay, hopefully I don't do that very often. But it's possible. And one of the reasons we've got to guard the heart and we've got to guard having this mask on that we wear so easily is that it just fools some, but it doesn't fool God. The rest of the Sermon on the Mount is all about this trying to let the heart reflect the nature of God. Just keep reading in chapter 6. Here's what Jesus says. He says, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people to be seen by them. For then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you as the hypocrites do, in the synagogues and in the streets, that they can be praised by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you give to the needy, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. If you were to go on through the rest of, or at least the next few verses of chapter 6, Jesus would say, let's talk about how you give, and let's talk about how you pray, and let's talk about how you fast, and let's realize in the midst of all of those things, it's not a matter of you showing off how good you are at giving, praying, and fasting. It's about letting your heart look like the heart of God. And Jesus would say, it's a problem when those two things don't look the same. When my outward doesn't match my inward. Sometimes I think we even think, sorry, there's too many thinks in there. Sometimes we think, let's just make it that way, that we can fool God. Notice a couple lines from David. O Lord, who shall sojourn in your tent? Who will dwell on your holy hill? He who walks blamelessly and does what is right and speaks truth in his heart. Or another psalm, Psalm 24. Who shall ascend to the hill of the Lord? Who shall stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to what is false and does not swear deceitfully. I find those two psalms interesting because I think it's the psalmist's way of saying we've got a God who knows us inside and out. And there were moments in my life when I thought that was pretty frightening. Because let's be honest, if we understand God knowing everything going on in our little brains and our hearts, then there are probably some things we don't want him doing, right? And we don't want him knowing that we're doing. But yet, purity in heart is realizing we've got a God who sees through the masks that we wear. Okay, I can't see through the masks that you wear for the most part. If you walk in the door and you tell me, I love Jesus with all my heart, I'm going to say, I think they love Jesus with all their heart. You could be telling me a big old fib. I don't know. I can't see through those, but I've got a God who can. And I need to realize that if I'm going to practice this purity in heart that Jesus calls me to, phoniness has got to go out the door. Because phoniness doesn't bring blessedness. Just ask David. Before we read a little bit from Psalm 51, we have used this psalm in and out of this Beatitude study, but Psalm 51 is David's confessional psalm. And he's going to write in verse 10 these words, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. And then he's going to say in verse 17, he's going to say, the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. Okay, in the midst of Psalm 51, at least from what we imagine from what Hebrew scholars have said, is David has been confronted, and Nathan the prophet has come in and he's told this kind of haunting story about some sin that David's got in his life, and David emotionally and spiritually breaks down and loses it. And we think that this psalm comes out of that brokenness. And in the midst of that brokenness, what David is saying is, here's what I long for, because here's what's not here right now. Create in me a clean heart, O God. Take me and purify me. As we've been singing that song before the lesson, help us to be pure in heart. So how do we do it? How do we have a pure heart? How do we have a heart that is cleaned by the Father? Well, the first thing is a pure heart is a created gift. Or make that a recreated gift. See, all of us have a heart. Now remember, heart is the whole totality of who you are. It's not a blood ticker. It's not what you think of, just emotions. It's all of who you are, that it is a recreated gift. There's only one who can purify it. Okay, my heart can sometimes be a mess, and the only answer to purifying that heart is letting God the Father do it. Notice what Paul says in Acts chapter 15, not Paul, Peter, in Acts chapter 15. And God, who knows the heart, bore witness to them by giving them the Holy Spirit just as he did to us. And he made no distinction between us and them, having cleansed their hearts by faith. Okay, notice the important line right there is all of it, really. But the end of verse 9, that he has cleansed their hearts by faith. That the answer to our recreated heart is one that is done by a work of grace from the Father. And so at some point in your life, God started a work And he started on a work to recreate you to look like him. Okay, I believe that starts at baptism. I believe when you come in and you say, I believe Jesus is the Son of God, and I've got some sin that I can't take care of, and the only answer is him, and so I'm going to bow my knee to him and be baptized, that I believe that's when God starts taking our heart and not only purifying it for the first time, but then refining it over and over and over again. See, our heart is kind of like gold. And, you know, if you got gold, it's got all kinds of impurities in there. But you start to heat that gold, and the impurities kind of burn off. And you go from 14 karat to 18 karat to 21 karat to 24 karat. And I don't know if there are any more carats after that, because I'm too poor to buy anything but 5 karat. But it gets better and better and better as it's refined by the refiner. See, the gift of grace that God has given us continues to refine us. And in those moments when our heart starts to go awry, and in those moments when we chase things that we should not chase, and we come back to the Father, it's this recreated gift of purifying our hearts. Which leads to the second thing. Is a pure heart is a dedicated pursuit. Okay, let's go back to our jeweler image. The jeweler doesn't just stick the gold under the fire for 12 seconds and say, oh, good enough, and then cast a ring out of it. He puts it under there and he leaves it there, and it lets all the work that needs to be done be done. So Peter would write this in 1 Peter 1. He would say, having purified your souls by your obedience to the truth, for sincere brotherly love, love one another earnestly from a pure heart. Okay, I think what's interesting about the whole context of 1 Peter 1 is the real life, authentic life that goes to God, understands what he's done for us, and then is reflected out of us. And so what God is saying is, here's the purity of heart that's been bestowed upon you through God's goodness and God's love, but now the call to that is we have this same brotherly love for each other, and we look like the one who loved us. But are we willing to make that choice? Are we willing to make that choice that says, I want to look and love like God does? That I want that same purity in heart. Okay, there's a story told in Matthew 12 that reads like this. And one of the scribes came up and heard them disputing with one another. And seeing that he answered them well, he asked him, which commandment is the most important of all? Okay, let's stop there for just a second. That's a pretty noble question, right? What's the most important thing I need to do? We've all heard that. I mean, I remember going into every class in college saying, okay, what matters the most, the test or the paper at the end? Because if it was the paper at the end, I was going to work hardest on that. And if it was the test, I was going to work hardest on those things. We find out what needs to be done the most. And here's Jesus' answer. The most important thing is, hear, O Israel. Now he's going to quote Deuteronomy. The Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. And then he goes on. Okay, remember, heart is this descriptive term of all of us. And then he's going to talk about all the rest of the totality of man. He's going to say, love your God with all your heart, with your soul, with your mind, and with your strength. And I think, I kind of think of this as it's heart, colon, soul, mind, strength. Because the soul, mind, strength all reflect what that heart does. And so God looking at Israel through Moses, and then God talking to Israel through Jesus is saying, here's what's going to matter. And then he's going to go to 31, and just for the fun of it, Jesus throws in a second thing, and you'll love your neighbor as yourself. For there is no other commandments greater than these. Okay, wouldn't you love to live a week like that? I mean, wouldn't you love to live an entire week in your life when every single thing you did was floated through the lens of, I'm going to love God with all of my heart, and I'm going to love everybody else with all of my heart? Okay, if we could manage to pull that off, it would be the least phony week of our lives. Because too often, there's going to be moments when those things slip out. There are going to be moments when we don't love God with all of our being. And there are going to be moments when we don't love those around us the way God has called us. And there are going to be moments when our purity and heart is pretty up in the air. James would say this. He would say, draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. So in the midst of that, he's kind of disciplining the people he's writing to a little bit, saying, you've gotten off a little bit, now figure out how to come back. What I think he's really saying is stop the sham and be real. Okay, I've said that a few times in counseling. I don't know if it's ever worked right. I've had a husband and wife up there that are fussing and they're going through motions, and I've said, stop the sham and just be real to each other. Be authentic. Open up your lives. Open up your heart. Open it up so everybody can see. See, we're pretty good at the sham. Okay, I was thinking back to, it was probably 2 years ago, and I walked in on a Sunday morning, and I was in a grumpy mood. I mean, I was mad at the world. I don't even know what made me mad, but I came in, and I was irritated, and it wasn't at Nikki, so don't blame Nikki. It was probably Jonah. Since he's not here, let's throw the blame on him. But I came in irritated and mad, and I definitely wasn't experiencing purity in heart thoughts. And I walked in, and one of the good old deacons standing back at the back door said, hey, Doug, how you doing? I'm doing great. I needed that deacon to grab me by the throat and say, stop the sham. Because what I really probably should have said to the deacon who I respected immensely is, man, I am mad at the world right now, and I could really use somebody to talk to for about 30 seconds so when I go to class, I can be the teacher that they need, and I can be the preacher needs, and I can do those things. Instead, I just kept the sham up. Now, I hope that's not a constant thing that comes out of me, but if it is, I need to stop the sham. And maybe you do too. The third thing. Is a pure heart, in the words of Jesus from the Beatitudes, has an anticipated reward. And I love the reward. Can you remember how it goes? Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall what? See. They shall see God. My favorite writer, who has been dead for, I don't know, 40, 50 years now, said this. When we get more real, we're going to start seeing God better than we ever have before. But one day, we will witness the glorious presence of God. But yet, some are terrified to stand before a God, and some people just can't wait. Okay, if I'm willing to stop the sham, and let God take over permanent residence in my heart through everything I do and every action that I take, I'm going to start seeing God better than ever before, and I'm going to witness His presence, and then someday I'm going to long to be there. Okay, I've sat at a lot of deathbeds. I'm guessing by now thousands of deathbeds. And I see one of two things. I see I'm about to die and I am scared to death. And I think God is going to bring the hammer. And I think I've got one place I'm going to next. And I think as soon as God is done with me, I'm going to need fire retardant protective clothing because I'm going to hell. And then I've seen the other. Someday soon, I'm going to see God. I think of your Aunt Joyce. Someday soon, I'm going to get rid of this body that's fighting cancer. I'm going to get rid of a body that's broken down, and I'm going to go be in the presence of the one who created me and who saved me and who loves me beyond what I can even comprehend. I call that dying well, and that's the way I want to die. I don't want to die scared. I don't want to be laying in a hospital room or be laying in the ER or be laying in my own bed at home and thinking, I wonder if I die in the next 5 minutes, if I'm going to spend eternity in hell. I want to be laying there saying, no matter what happens next, I'm going to see God, because the heart is aligned with the heart of God. John writes this in 1 John. He says, beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when He appears, we shall be like Him, and we shall see Him as He is. And everyone who thus hopes in Him, notice what he says, purifies himself as he is pure. We used to capitalize he when it would talk to God. The he on that very last line is a capital H. That we purify ourselves as he is. Because purity in heart's got a reward. We've all had people and friends that we've longed to see. And we get everything ready for them, don't we? I mean, if we got some friends coming over that maybe we knew from college, and they're coming to spend the weekend, we have a house that's clean, and we have groceries bought for a few meals, and we've got activities planned, and everything is lined up so that when they show up at the front door, everything is just right. I want to be that way for God, because I want to long to see him just like I long to see those friends that have been gone for a little while. Because the truth is, he hasn't been gone. He's been right there the whole time. So we have this destiny. And I think the destiny that John is talking about is a destiny with purity that ought to cause us to be pure. Okay, the destiny with purity part is the destiny with God, which then is going to change the way I live here. Okay, years and years ago, I can say that now because I think it's been a long time, all of the high school kids were wearing, and maybe other kids too, were wearing bracelets that had the WWJD. I got to get all that in my head. Anybody remember what that stood for? What would Jesus do? We had one kid here who was wrestling with some things, and every time he was wrestling with things, he would take that little band and stretch it out as far as he could, and he'd pop himself in the wrist. And that was the reminder, well, Jesus wouldn't do that, you doofus, do something else. I wish we thought that way more. When I'm sitting in front of the TV, when we're surfing on the internet, when we're reading a book, when we're walking down the street, when we're looking at things maybe we shouldn't look at, maybe we ought to pop ourselves on the wrist and say, what would Jesus do? Or maybe the song that Wayne led right before the sermon will be in your heart the rest of the week. Pure in heart, O God, help me to be. Okay, I was driving down Main Street and I saw one of Bullock's Jewelers signs, and I don't want to throw Kyle under the bus at all, but it was like bribing your wife. And I thought, ooh, you can get away with some stuff, and then you just buy your diamond and you bribe your wife. And pure in heart, O God, help me to be. May I devote my life wholly to thee. That's the life I want. My guess is that's the life you want, but pursuing it is hard. So I want you to try to pray a prayer. It's the end of one of the greatest psalms that David writes. It's a psalm we often use to talk about God the Creator and the human being as his great creation. But at the very end of that psalm, he says this: "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." Okay, I don't know if David is wording that as a prayer or not, but I think that's a pretty dangerous prayer, and I hope it's one we can pray. Just hear it again. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And if there's anything that's going the wrong direction now, paraphrase 24, you lead me in the way I should go. Okay, my call to you this morning is you pray that prayer every single day. Not with a mask on, not with your church face, but from deep in your heart, you pray, search me, O God, and know me. Try me and know my thoughts and lead me the right way. A hard prayer. But yet Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. The reward of that beatitude far outweighs some of the difficulties that keeping our heart aligned with God might bring. They will see God. So if you need us, we are always here. If you just need to have that conversation of how you can get your life going the right direction, elders are at each door. I'm here at the front, and then I'll be there at the back. You find us. Or